but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a 0.08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a 0.08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. Now, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, live from the Independent Sports Bar and Grill, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
Well, I am downtown at the Independent, downtown Portland's premier sports bar, where they have 34 TVs. From every vantage point in the room, you can see a television or more than one TV. Excited about the Niners. They're playing the Jets tonight. Aaron Rodgers trying to ruin my football season before it even starts. We have a civil war on the horizon. Oregon and Oregon State are going to play. Beaver fans, how are you feeling about this game? I have to think Beaver fans are more interested, intrigued, and excited, engaged than they were weeks ago. And Duck fan, I thought Oregon played a really good quarter against Boise State. And certainly you have to give Oregon credit for winning the football game. It is about winning. Washington proved that last year. They didn't look great all throughout the season. They just won and won and won. Oregon fan, how are you feeling? I want to take the temperature of the Civil War football game right off the top of the show today. If you are anywhere near downtown Portland or interested in watching Monday night football in a place where you can actually get it, sorry, DirecTV customers. Hasn't TV ruined the first couple weeks of the college football season and is threatening to ruin some of the NFL season? Like, the TV providers, Peacock included. What the heck was going on with Peacock with the Oregon-Boise State game? The game glitching, the audio not matching, they were a play or two behind sometimes. The Big Ten Network blacked out on Comcast with Xfinity. I mentioned DirecTV and their staring contest that they're having with Disney that is affecting ESPN. I was talking to Josh, the owner of the Independent, just before I went on air, and he was saying they have it all. They and I can't imagine it's cheap to have like everything: Hulu, DirecTV, the CW. You're locked into everything. Peacock, but they've got it all. And he said because of the proximity to a lot of the hotels in this downtown corridor, we're right on Southwest Broadway. They will get people from out of town who will wander in and say, hey, can you put on the Colts game? Can you put on the Titans game? Can you put on the Niners and Jets on Monday Night Football as that game is counting down in Santa Clara? I'll be here leading right into Monday Night Football. So if you're in the neighborhood, stop by and give me a fist bump. We had a nice gentleman who swung by here earlier who gave me a fist bump and chatted with him for a while. But I'm going to get to talking about the Civil War. I want to know how Oregon State fans are feeling about the Civil War football game. 503-417-7575. Tell me what a win in the Civil War would mean to you, Oregon State fan. What would it mean? Not what it would necessarily mean to the TV partners and maybe the message nationally, or maybe you could include that. But what would winning that game mean to you on Saturday at Research Stadium? Fox is going to carry the broadcast of that game. I'm going to talk about why it's important that this series continues to be played. It started in 1894. They have interrupted this series twice, once for a war, and once because the teams in 1910 got into such a brawl as the game was played in Corvallis that year. They got in a brawl, and people at the train station, as the Oregon fans were trying to get back to Eugene, ended up getting in fights. And police were involved, and the Eugene University there in Eugene, University of Oregon, accused Oregon State of hooliganism. That's the quote that was in the Oregon newspaper. And Oregon State's student body voted not to play the game in 1911. So it took a hiatus in 1911. It was played at a neutral site with police escorts in 1912. This series has featured tie games. In fact, the last regular season tie in college football history as Oregon State and Oregon played to a tie. It's had a toilet bowl. It has had all sorts of NFL players play in it. It has been a fun series. But what would it mean to you, Beaver fan, to get a W in this game after what happened last summer, after all of the hype and the preseason attention that Oregon got? What would winning this game mean to you, Oregon State fan? 503-417-7575 is the number. Now, Oregon fan, I got to ask you as well how you're feeling about this game. Because the bottom line is Oregon is 2-0. I also see the explosion and the athleticism and the ability for Oregon in any given moment to put it together, drive the football down the field, kick a game-winning field goal, get a big play on a kickoff return, get a big play on a punt return. Oregon has the ability at any given moment to absolutely punish the opposition and prove that they are athletically superior, better recruits. It's just evident on a 59-yard slant pass that goes for a touchdown, and it's evident on a punt return, and it's evident on a kickoff return that goes 99 and a half yards and then another half yard for a touchdown. But I want to know from Oregon fans, how are you feeling going into this week? Because on one hand, if you're an Oregon fan, you might go, hey, we're 2-0. We haven't played good football. Getting the rivalry game at Oregon State. Going to be favored by double digits, although this game started at 20.5 when the line was first set. And then early, you know, yesterday I saw early line listed at 14.5. It is coming down, and I think it will continue to come down. But Oregon, if you're an Oregon fan, you're looking at a bye next week. And if you can get to 3-0 with a bye, then you start your conference schedule, UCLA, Michigan State. If you're an Oregon fan, maybe this unfolds in a way that is favorable to Oregon's season. It is a marathon after all. 503-417-7575. I want to know how you're feeling, Oregon fans. And if you're a casual observer, if you're an SEC fan, you're a Big 12 fan, you are a pro football fan who takes a casual interest in college football until it gets going, I want to hear from you as well. What does this game look like to you from 20,000 feet outside sort of the ecosystem of the Civil War? The phone lines are open. We're going to take a lot of calls today. We are going to talk about the Apple Cup as well. Good friend of the show, Jason Puckett, will be joining us in the 4 o'clock hour. Puck is a Washington State honk. He's going to talk to us about that Apple Cup game. I talked to Ann McCoy, the athletic director at Washington State, this morning. She told me that only about 38,000 tickets have been sold for the Apple Cup. They're holding it in an NFL stadium. It means that it's not going to look like a full stadium for the Apple Cup, standing room only at Racer Stadium. You know, it'll be interesting to see from Washington and Washington State's standpoint what that series looks like and what that game looks like. And there are a lot of people picking Washington State to upset and beat Washington in the Apple Cup. And we got a big Cougar fan in the house here just pumped a fist at me. And so if you're a Washington State fan looking at the Apple Cup, you tell me, are you apathetic or are you enthusiastic? I don't know, because Washington State fans, angry at Washington, a lot of them will tell you they didn't want to play this series. They don't want it to continue. But it is a series that I think is good for all sides, all parties, certainly good for fans, and it's great for me, selfishly, because I like a good rivalry. Let's go to the phone lines. Roy is in Portland. I cannot wait to see what Roy thinks of this series from an SEC viewpoint. That we have a line open at 503-417-7575. I want you to join the conversation. Roy, how do you see it?
I see it, man. You got to play Oregon. Oregon State got to play, man. It's just like Georgia and Georgia Tech, man. We got to play Georgia Tech every year, man, no matter what, man. You know, it's been some teams, man. We have some, like, all-American teams and went into Georgia Tech and lost. So, that series got to go, man. You got to keep playing it. But, I was thinking about this weekend, John, and you know who Oregon reminds me of, man? They remind me of Georgia before Kirby Smart. That's what Oregon reminds me of. We have all the four-star, five-star NFL Hall of Famers from Hines Ward to Matthew Stafford to, I could go down the list, man, you know, and never could win an SEC title and never could win a national championship. And you don't know how frustrating that was, man. And it was because of coaching, man. I mean, I'm telling you, Joe, we would have NFL teams, man. You know, from A.J. Green to Todd Gurley to Terrell Davis to Champ Bailey, and never could win an SEC championship and never could win a national championship. But, I mean, that's just kind of how Oregon reminds me. You can have all the four-stars, five-stars if you want to, but it's coaching, man. I don't see this. This is going to be – I keep saying it. This is going to be a dogfight. Every single game Oregon has – I can see Oregon State beat Oregon. It's just something not right with this team. I don't know what it is. I'm looking at it. It don't make sense. But I'm looking at it like, man, I look at it from the standpoint of last year. Dan Lanning could not beat Kalen DeBoer three times in a row, man. How can you lose to the same team three times in a row? It's just something about the coaching on this team. Dan Lanning, you know, it also takes me to this. Jonathan Smith, man, I always sing his praises. If you swap Dan Lanning for Jonathan Smith with the same talent on Oregon, Dan Lanning would finish in last place every year. It's just some coaches. If I put Jonathan Smith, the head coach today of Oregon, you're going to win a national championship. I'm telling you, it's just something about certain coaches, man. It's just I can't really put my finger on it, but it's just certain coaches, man, are good, but they don't get the maximum out of the team, and they right. you'll sit back and wonder, why didn't this team win a championship with all this talent?
Yeah, and the other thing, Roy, is that with Dan Lanning, look, it's obvious what Oregon was doing in the wake of Chip Kelly, Mark Helfrich. Oregon went after recruiters. It was a deviation from how they had hired in the past. They hired Willie Taggart. They hired a recruiter. And then they said, oh, we can backfill with great position coaches and great coordinators. That was the mission. It was evident that that was going on. And prior to them handing the keys to Dan Lanning, you know, I had reported that you know, Justin Wilcox, who got a big win for Cal over the weekend at Auburn, that Justin Wilcox had been offered the job. But Wilcox was offered the job with stipulations. Oregon wanted to control who the assistant coaches were going to be and who the coordinator is going to be. And, you know, Wilcox could be the coach in name and in appearance, but he wasn't going to get to bring his guys with him. Dan Lanning was hired because he's a great recruiter. Tosh LePoy was hired as the defensive coordinator. He had never been a coordinator except at Alabama, and he got stripped of his play-calling duties mid-season in the 1 year at Alabama that he got to call the defense. So it's not like Oregon has got all this experience on the coaching staff, but part of coaching in 2024 is being able to recruit and being able to use NIL, and there's some truth in what Roy is saying, that if you took a great coach who could get a lot out of three-star guys. And look at Jonathan Smith is sitting at 2-0. He's, you know, tied for first place in the Big Ten standings because he beat Maryland. And, you know, there's some truth in that he gets more, makes more out of less. But Lanning's job now is to try to channel what he got in the third quarter for a spell from his team. And, you know, and in most games he's going to show up. They're going to have better talent. He's not going to have to, you know, out-coach everybody, but he's going to have to out-coach teams like Ohio State. He's going to have to go on the road and win at places like Purdue and Wisconsin and Ann Arbor, Michigan. And on Saturday, he's got to go to Research Stadium against an Oregon State team that bloodied up San Diego State on Saturday night to the tune of 21-0 and did it in a way that was almost like just very methodical, just watching it's like watching a farmer plow. And I mean that with all respect to Oregon State. Like, it just was, they got an early 7, and then, you know, San Diego State drove down and very nearly tied the game. There was a turnover, and then Oregon State just took over and suffocated them. And, you know, Oregon on any given moment can give you a 59, 70, 100-yard play because they have an athlete capable of doing that. But what Oregon hasn't done this season is Oregon has not lined up for consistent periods of time and played mistake-free football. They make dumb mistakes. Dylan Gabriel doesn't look comfortable. But I'm going to leave this to you. As an Oregon fan, how are you feeling about this weekend's game? And for Oregon State, I want to hear from you, Beaver fan. What would winning the Civil War mean to you? I want to hear it. There's only one answer. It's your personal answer here. There's no right answer or wrong answer. But just tell me, what would winning that game mean to you? 503-417 7575. Gary is in Tualatin. Gary, welcome to the show.
Hey, John, good Ducks.
How are you feeling?
Really good. I was at the game down in the stands with the rest of the riffraff. And right there where Tasmania got the ball, taking it back. When it was over, well, first off, 5 minutes before it was over, just totally exhausted. That game, I mean, we yelled the whole way through. It was a mental battle. Beating the curse of Boise State is not the easiest thing in the world to do, and we didn't want to walk away with a loss. But when it was over, I sat down and said, that was one of the best games I've ever seen. It just had everything. It had run backs. It had fumbles. It was an ugly win, but there's no such thing as an ugly win. And what you're talking about, it's not the team you start with. It's the team you end with. And as far as the Civil War goes, and really the polls or anything else, with the new system, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if we lose to the Bees going, trying to get to the championship. It only matters winning the Big Ten. Nothing else matters. What the pundits say, what game day says, none of it matters. You win your conference now, and you're going.
So it doesn't matter to you if Oregon State wins the game on Saturday at Research Stadium.
Listen,
would it bother you, yeah. Or in the end, if they win the Big Ten title, you're saying it doesn't matter?
It doesn't matter in that we have had a brutal preseason. Beating Idaho, you're David against Goliath. Against Boise State, they hate us with a passion. There's a couple Boise State guys wanting to fight our guys after the game. They were so pissed off about the loss. And now we go and go against the Beavers, who hate us more than Boise State does. And we got to beat them. If we come out 3-0, we are tested. Whether you think so or not, it doesn't matter. These guys won a game against themselves and against a team that just absolutely despises us. And the same thing next week. This is a battle-tested team if they win. If they lose, it doesn't matter. We're all 0-0 except for Michigan State, which we'll have at home. We have to win the Big Ten, and that's all that matters.
Gary in Tualatin. Do you agree, other Duck fans, and how about Oregon State fans, your response to that at 503-417-7575? That Jonathan Smith-Michigan State game is interesting suddenly as Michigan State is looking better, playing a little better. Let's go to Mark in Portland. Mark, welcome back. How do you see it, Mark?
I don't see it quite like the last Duck fan does. I remember Mike Bellotti, he run the ball and stop the run. And we haven't done that well against Idaho or Boise State. Boise State really ran through us with that guy's a stud running back, but
yep.
That doesn't bode well for us in the Big Ten. And to say that if we lose against Oregon State, it's not a big deal. You can't afford to lose any of these out of conference games. Oregon, realistically, John, if you're being realistic, they're going to lose a few games this year. And if you're winning games against Idaho like we did and Boise State, that could come back to haunt us as far
sure.
as being an at-large bid if we have two losses. If we lose
yeah.
to Wisconsin and Ohio State, let's say,
yeah.
Going up against other two-loss teams. So we have to start not just winning football games like this. We have to, impose our will on these people and run the football. And I haven't seen that yet from Oregon. I mean, they should be dominant for running the ball against Boise State, Idaho, and really against Oregon State if they're going to be the team that they want to be. And, I'm nervous as hell about this game at Oregon State because they do hate us, and they have shown that they can – I don't think the spread is accurate. I don't understand why Oregon's a two-touchdown favorite. I think it should be more like 6 or 7 points
yeah.
because of the road game and the way we've looked.
Yeah. I appreciate that. I also think, look, Mark's hitting on something that I've been thinking about in the last 48 hours. I think the Oregon State players care deeply about this game and understand what it means. And I think if I'm Trent Bray, I'm going to spend my week reminding my guys that this this rivalry isn't just about all the history and tradition. It's about what happened last summer and what Oregon off to the Big Ten Conference represents. It's not just Oregon. It represents the establishment kind of going off and leaving Oregon State behind. Do the Oregon players understand it being the rivalry, in the same way? I don't know if they do. And I don't know if Dan Lanning, any amount of words can help them understand it, because the Oregon players are thinking about what? Playing in the NFL, playing Ohio State on October 12th, going to Ann Arbor and playing a game, being on TV and in the Big Ten Conference. They're not feeling left behind. They're not angry about what happened last summer. And I wonder, beyond the fans, if the players at Oregon and Oregon State understand this, will that be a factor in this game? That said, Oregon State, when they drive, I've watched both of their games. I've watched both Oregon games. As sloppy as Oregon has been on a given play, Dylan Gabriel can throw the ball to a variety of players on the field who can go 50-plus yards for a touchdown. Or a running back can take a handoff and go 50 yards for a touchdown. Or a punt return or a kickoff return. I have seen it in 2 weeks. You have too. As sloppy as Oregon has been, as uncomfortable as Dylan Gabriel has looked, if Oregon gets it together, and they did make some changes on the offensive line in the third quarter, they shuffled some guys around and stayed with it. They were better pass protection, fewer mistakes in the second half. Oregon was better that way. But, Oregon State needs to be almost perfect on a drive to drive 70 yards and get a touchdown. They're station to station. They have guys that play hard and play over their heads. But it's not the most gifted, talented Oregon State team that we have seen in the last few years. They don't have the game-breaking wide receiver. And there's no Damian Martinez, although the backs are good with Cam Griffin and company. But at the quarterback position, they're just okay. And, so I just kind of wonder if Oregon comes up with enough big plays, if there's any amount of, good football that Oregon State can play that would amount to a victory. So I think that's what the spread is reflecting. I think the spread is reflecting Oregon's potential. But Research Stadium, will that be a factor? I don't know. Beaver fan, where are you? I want to know what this game means to you. 503-417-7575. Denise is in Hillsboro. Denise, go ahead.
I'm of the more mature variety, fan, that is. My dad went to Oregon State, and his whole side of the family went to Oregon State. I married a duck, and my late daughter went to Oregon as well. So I have a stake in both games.
Okay.
Our household watches both games all the time when we can. Having said that, when I watched Oregon, and I had a tough time this past weekend, which is one of the reasons that I kind of hate some of these streaming contracts they've come up
with.
Yes,
yes.
It was
terrible.
Hard to flip from Peacock to, Hulu or Comcast or whatever. So I didn't really get to watch the Beavers this weekend. But I was left wondering the last two games with Oregon, what is there something about coming in through the transfer portal and having such a short period of time to learn all the offensive and defensive schemes? And I know on paper, everybody, the Ducks look very deep across the board, basically, and they're all very talented and gifted. But I still wonder, when you're learning things that are as complex as football is today, if there isn't a struggle getting, everybody on the same page, simply because they weren't there last year. And that's my question, has anybody thought of that? And as far as the stake in the game, I think certainly Oregon State has an axe to grind, and I'm very scared or nervous for the Ducks on Saturday.
Denise, can I ask, how mature are you?
Over 55.
Actually, well,
I'm 69.
all right. People are living to 120, 130 now, so you're middle-aged. But listen, here's the deal. I have thought about that point you made about the transfer players and synergy and team culture and team chemistry. It's certainly lacking at Oregon. You can see it. And it may just be as simple as you know, I look at Oregon at sometimes, and I see a club basketball team that hasn't played together, or Team USA in the Olympics when they weren't valuing chemistry. And it was like, gosh, you look at LeBron and Allen Iverson, and you look at, you know, Amari Stoudemire and Sean Marion, and you go, wow, this collection of NBA players should be dominant. And then the sum of it doesn't equal the parts, or the parts don't, you know, it just doesn't pencil out. Oregon feels that way to me, and it just may be that they need some time. 503-417-7575. More of your phone calls coming up. It's Civil War Week. We are at the Independent in Portland downtown, broadcasting here today, leading you right into Monday Night Football. Stop by.
Live from the Independent Sports Bar and Grill, back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Voice guy is right. He's telling the truth. I'm at the Independent Sports Bar and Grill, where there are also 34 TV sets, a massive projection screen, a full bar, food, and Anna and the girls are headed down here. So I'll get a scouting report from them as well. I want to take phone calls. We got phone lines are jammed. I want to hear from you. Beaver fan, Duck fan, neutral party, what do you see in this Civil War football game? Matt is in Portland. Matt, welcome to the show.
John, hey, it feels pretty funny talking about Civil War and Apple Cup in September.
I know. For 100%.
I think historically, both of those games have meant so much. You know, I was married many years ago on the date of the Civil War, and I remember vividly everybody sitting in the bar instead of dancing and watching the Civil War and drinking beer. But I'm not quite so sure that perhaps the Ducks and the Huskies feel that way anymore, right? They're moving to the Big Ten. The Big Ten is trying to make the interstate rivalry more important than the intrastate rivalry. At least that's what it appears. We have a lot of transfers that don't know the history of toilet bowls. They don't know the history of hooligans at the train stop. And I think Oregon State and Washington State probably still have a little bit of a red ass about this, right? A win for them could mean everything. It could mean a Big 12 invite. It could mean an ACC invite. It could mean better media rights for a Pac-12 rebuild. And it'll definitely stir the national conversation around them as a Cinderella story, which helps them in their recruiting and it helps them with their morale. So those are my thoughts. I just wonder if maybe UW and Oregon are moving along to other things, don't have their eye on the football.
Yeah, and I think we'll find out. And I think if you asked Oregon's players and Washington's players which game matters, they're going to first point at the Husky-Duck rivalry game, and then secondarily, I think, point at the Apple Cup of the Civil War. And I think if you ask Beaver and Cougar players what their rivalry game is, I think they're absolutely going to point to this weekend. So there may be some of that in play. Washington State is playing well. I will not be surprised if Washington State wins that game. And, in fact, I'm leaning in that direction of picking the Cougars. I still am wrestling and handicapping the Oregon-Oregon State game. And part of the problem with that game is trying to figure out which version of the Ducks will show up to Research Stadium. 503-417-7575, one line open now. Let's go to James, who's listening in Roseburg on KSKR 1490. James, what's up, man?
Hey, what's up? Hey, you know, lifelong Ducks fan here, and after watching the last couple of games, I'm kind of nervous about the OSU game. Couldn't stop the run for a long time, and they're in our backfield constantly. And how's that going to fare when we start Big Ten play against teams like Ohio State and Michigan, you know?
Yeah. Did you get any hope? Was there any part of Saturday's game against Boise State where you walk away going, okay, I saw the Ducks I thought I would see this year?
Yeah, that big strike from Gabriel. Mm-hmm. Who caught that pass?
The 59-yarder that went to the house?
Yeah, I mean, that one. And then, I mean, the return game was on point. Those little flashes of greatness that I got hope for, but if you can't keep the linebackers and D-line out of your backfield and you can't stop the run, I mean, how many games are you going to win?
Especially
against a conference like the Big Ten that's known to be big, powerful, bruising runners.
I was left. There were three big plays in that Oregon game that are left embedded in my mind, and none of them are the kick that won, that ultimately won the game. By the way, what's going on with kickers at Oregon? Because Atticus Sappington was near perfect at Oregon State a year ago, proved he could do it. Now he goes to Oregon, he misses an extra point, misses a field goal, kicks the game winner. Fine, you're good there. But I really was left thinking about, you know, Oregon and their ability to score quickly and to be terrific when they need to be, and thinking, gosh, if they could ever just stop with the sloppiness, they'll be in good hands, right? Punt, kickoff return, two special team scores, 59-yard slant pass that goes for a touchdown. That's the kind of stuff we kind of expected. David is in Eugene listening on Fox Sports Eugene. David, go.
Hey there, John. I'm going to go with the edge for the Oregon Ducks in this one. I think we've got more talent on the field. We haven't put it together yet, so I don't know if our talent will overwhelm the Beavers yet, but I'm going to go with these 2 points. I think that Dan Lanning, having coached already in two rivalry games and then also playing Washington three times, he's going to have the edge on Bray and company. This is going to be the first big game they've coached in.
Yeah.
And then, two, with Dylan Gabriel playing in the Red River shootout, he's been in front of 100,000 people. I think he's going to be cool, calm, and collected for this rivalry game. So that's why I'm going with Oregon.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk you out of that. You're making points there. I also think Gabriel looks really uncomfortable in a way that I did not expect. He just looks like he doesn't trust his offensive line to deal yet for the receivers. It's problematic. He needs to get comfortable. Alex is in Happy Valley. Alex, welcome from Happy Valley.
Hey, John. LaSalle alum here as well, so go Falcons.
There you go.
I'm going to take a different angle than a lot of the previous callers. I really like Oregon State this weekend, and I'll share a couple reasons why. Watched both Duck games the last 2 weeks, and dominant teams control the line of scrimmage, and Oregon hasn't been able to do that against a really inferior opponent in Idaho in week one, which was a big surprise. And then last week against Boise State, Janty had his way all game long. And so when you think about Oregon State football, they have that smash-mouth identity. Even with Jonathan Smith gone, we saw them exert their will against San Diego State last week. Very much Oregon State football that we've, you know, grown accustomed to over these past couple of years. And I just think the Ducks, they have the talent, but I don't think they have the cohesion. You've hit the nail on the head. They don't have the kind of togetherness and the grittiness that the Beavers might have. And this game just means a lot more for the orange and black. The Ducks are going to be looking ahead to, you know, bigger and better things in the Big Ten, the NFL, et cetera. And so I think from an Oregon State standpoint, they're going to really come in and kind of muck up the game. And one of my biggest concerns is, like you said, Dylan Gabriel doesn't look comfortable. And a quarterback of his height, you know, 5'9", 5'10", you can really get in there at the line of scrimmage and kind of make things difficult for him. And I think he was missing on some deep balls. You saw some discomfort in the pocket. There was just some things at the end of the game against Boise State that left me thinking, like, they're very vulnerable this weekend. So I like what Oregon State can put together if they come in with a disciplined game plan.
Yeah, I think Oregon's got more talent. Right, Oregon's got more talent, but Oregon hasn't looked like a great team yet. And maybe it's a gel factor. Oregon had 13 of their 22 starters or transfers. Is there an issue there? Are we learning on the fly that the NIL transfer portal era comes with some pain? Denise is in Hillsboro. Denise, welcome.
Hi. I think we spoke before.
You're still holding. You got more to say?
I'm a traditionalist and love both the Apple Cup and the AKA Civil War.
Okay, let's talk. Okay, real quick, because I got a couple of Washington State fans that are holding as well. You tell me, Apple Cup, Civil War, are the stakes any different for these two teams? Or Oregon State, Washington, Oregon aligned, you know, on opposite sides of this thing?
I think Oregon State, Washington State have the same stakes. And I think, honestly, I think there could be two upsets over the weekend.
Ooh. Denise, you call back on Monday if you called your shot. Mark in Beaverton has called in. Mark, what's up, man?
Hey, John. So, first of all, with Oregon, one thing you mentioned in your email today was that Washington last year, how many of those games did they win ugly, that they were down? I mean, didn't they, like...
They had eight of their 12 regular season games were one-score games.
See, there you go. There you go. So if Oregon can do the same thing, if that's going to be the persona, I'll take that all day long as they win. So, you know, we're grieving because, you know, we're just waiting for them to lose a game. Well, you know, I hope not, obviously. I want them to do well. But, you know, if they take on the same persona as Washington did last year, that's fine with me. And with the Beavers, first road shutout since the toilet bowl. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
This was the first road shutout since the toilet bowl.
Yeah. It was just interesting to kind of be there because they let the air out of the stadium, Snapdragon Stadium there in San Diego. And it was interesting that the atmosphere was, you know, Oregon State was only up 7-0, but had dominated the game into the third quarter. And then, you know, because they wore San Diego State out, they pile on with two touchdowns at the end. My concern for Oregon State is, do they have the firepower? Because Oregon can take Trayshon Holden on a 59-yard slant pass for a touchdown, or Whittington on a kickoff return, and you have the Tez factor. But Oregon State's got to do it like 5, 8, 12, 3, 7 yards at a time.
But didn't you explain how Oregon State wins this game? Don't allow explosive plays, and you're going to win this game because you are the more disciplined, stronger team.
They have to think that way. Pastor Matt has called in. He is a Washington State fan. I got to check in on the Apple Cup. What are you saying? What do you say, Pastor Matt?
Well, I really have not seen the Huskies play yet this year, but I will be watching the Apple Cup with my dad. He turns... he's a diehard Husky fan, and he turns 80 on Monday, and so I'm going to stay here in Pullman. My dad's in an assisted living area, and so we're going to watch the game together, but I don't know a lot about the Dogs. And actually, I don't know if I know a lot about the Cougars yet either, because on week one against Barney's PSU team, our quarterback, John Mateer, threw for 5 touchdowns and then ran for another, and then this last week he ran for, you know, 2 yards shy of 200 yards, setting a record for the Cougars for a quarterback. But our passing game was not anywhere near the first week. So many unknowns, but really excited to kind of have this third game to kind of understand who we are and who the Huskies are.
Yeah, here's the thing I would tell you. Washington State's defense, I think, is real. If they can figure something out on offense, and it's kind of been the story under Jake Dickert, if they can figure something out on offense, I think they can win this game. And I think they have, of the four schools, I think they have the best, you know, couple of wins if you combine the two wins. I don't like Washington's schedule. They haven't really played anybody. Oregon, Boise State was a good win, but it was an ugly win. Idaho looks like an okay win, but it was an ugly win. Oregon State, San Diego State, and Idaho State are not anywhere as good as Texas Tech. So, you know, I think Washington State has the best body of work so far.
Yeah, it's an exciting time to be a Coug. I think some of the developments that you've reported on over the last couple of weeks about, you know, partnering with the CW and the 2025 schedule, I'm in a lot better mood in terms of Cougar football and athletics than I was, I think, a month ago, just because of, you know, the start. And my frustration is that they scheduled both the Civil War and the Apple Cup for the same time, so I can't watch both games, you know, in their entirety at the same time. So.
Well, you're going to have to figure it out. Get a laptop out and then watch the other one with your dad on the TV. I love that you're spending time with your dad, man. That's great. Good on you.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, Pastor Matt. There you go. A little Apple Cup action. Our Big Splash is coming up. Steven and I will kick it around. I'm broadcasting today at the Independent Sports Bar. We're on Broadway, downtown Portland. Stop on by if you're in the neighborhood. If you're in downtown Portland, there's no excuse for you not to come by here. We're going to lead you right into Monday Night Football. You got the bald-faced truth.
Live
from the Independent Sports Bar and Grill. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Voice guy is telling the truth. We're at the Independent today. Portland's best sports bar. We're in downtown Portland on Broadway, where 34 or so TVs, counting them all up. You can watch every game all at once. You know, look, in today's world, where we are seeing streaming and blackouts. It's very cumbersome these days. My dad, I was on a phone call with my dad on the way here, and he was saying he's worried about Monday Night Football. Can he get it? He's got DirecTV. It's on ESPN. Yeah, but can you get it if you have ABC? Oh, did you watch the Peacock game? No, I couldn't get it, so I followed the game online. That's not fun. Can you show me how to do Hulu later? You know, you're having those conversations. I'm having those conversations. Steven, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good, man. How are you doing?
How come you didn't come down here? You're just several blocks away at the studio. What's so important that you got to be there?
I mean, I had a lot of audio to find, had a lot of research I had to do. I had to go through my week three college football picks, my initial leans, you know.
Okay. All right. Do you have a lean on the Apple Cup?
Yeah, I think I like Washington. I do like Washington in this one. I know that Mateer has been great for Washington State. I just think Texas Tech's not very good, and unfortunately, Bruce Barnum and Portland State, you know, they lose to Weber State last week as well. I just don't know how good Washington State is. I know Washington's been, you know, in the transition mode, but I think Jed Fish is an elite coach. I think Washington's going to get this done in this one.
Okay. How about the Civil War?
I'm going to Oregon State. There's no way I'm betting on Oregon right now. I have a lot of questions about the Oregon Ducks right now. There's never been a question about the talent. Like, we have never questioned the talent of the Oregon team. I think it's okay to question, is the coaching staff putting them in the right spots? Are they putting them in the right spots to succeed? I believe that eventually they will. Dan Lanning is the guy. I think he's the right choice to be the head coach. But I think it's okay to question, like, are they putting the talent in the right spots right now for Oregon? And then physicality-wise, John, they're getting pushed around by teams on the offensive line. That offensive line has been atrocious the first 2 weeks.
Right.
I think Oregon State's going to be able to push them around as well. Yep. And that's the reason why Dylan Gabriel hasn't been as good. They haven't ran for a rushing touchdown this season. Besides Dylan Gabriel, the running backs have no rushing touchdowns. I think that offensive line is a bigger problem than they're letting on right now, and I think that's going to come to effect. I think Oregon wins, but I'm taking Oregon State plus the points easily.
Oregon started the game and then switched one of the guards to center, brought a player in to play one of the guard positions, flipped the other guard to the other side, played better in the second half with that combination. I think they're going to stay with that combination. Did they figure something out? We will find out. But I haven't liked the first, of the first eight quarters of Oregon's season, about six of them have been a disaster. Steve's in Beaverton. Steve, go ahead.
Hey, John. Always great to talk to you. I'm a neutral Oregon State, but I'm a fan like all the Oregon fans are. It cracks me up. But just watching the two games that I did, first of all, they're 124th in the nation against average rush or yards per rush. Number two, last year their offensive line, they would blow the defensive line, I don't care who it was, 5 yards, 6 yards off the line of scrimmage. I mean, nobody was touching their backs until 6 yards down the field.
Yeah.
I'm watching Idaho State and Boise State. They, this is not Ohio State. This is not USC. This is not Michigan. You know, and if these guys can't move Idaho State and Boise State, what are they going to do against those big teams? And I feel, neutral fan, I think that Oregon is overrated. I think they're going to lose two or three games this year. I think Oregon State's going to be the first one that beats them.
Well, Beaver fans are going to like what you're selling. We're going to find out on Saturday. And Beaver fan, Duck fan, you tell me, 503-417-7575. We're at the Independent Sports Bar. The owner of the Independent has slid into the broadcast booth. Josh Johnston is here. How many TVs do you have in this room, Josh?
34.
34 TVs? I had some help on that.
plus the big projector behind.
Plus the large projector that is behind. Give me an idea, like, in this world of, do you have Peacock, do you have all the, you know, how are you navigating that as a sports bar?
Well, it's expensive, but it's worth it, and we're really betting on people being frustrated and giving up at home and giving them another excuse to get back out and be social and go watch a game in a bar, so.
Yeah.
We're hoping we see some of that business.
You're surrounded by hotels down here. So you must get people walking in off the street going, hey, can you get the Colts game? Can you get the Raiders?
Yeah, I would say that is what helps us be so successful down here is the proximity to all those hotels, because we're not just watching our local teams. We're getting that out of town traffic, and they want to catch their game.
And I think sports fans too, they want to be together watching a game. And so even tonight, Jets, Niners, when you saw that on the Monday Night Football schedule, I have to think you went, okay, that'll be a good one for business.
Oh yeah, we're excited.
Yeah.
We always get a, you know, West Coast, we always get a great Niner crowd, and that's a great way to kick it off. So
how is this place different than maybe some of the other sports bars that you've seen or been to or even been involved with?
Well, again, the number one differentiator that I notice is just being located to a market outside of your local market, right? Because, you know, we don't have a football team, we don't have a pro baseball team, so we're getting fans, but we just don't have as big of a sports market as some of these other big cities. So having access to fans from around the country that are looking for games on our off nights, it really helps fill the seats on a, you know, a Tuesday night when there's not much going on.
All right, who do you root for in the NFL? Do you have an NFL team, or are you?
I'm originally Bears. I'm a Niner guy.
Oh yeah,
guy,
so all right, we're
stoked.
Good.
Yeah,
we are good. All right, I love this guy. Josh Johnson's here. His staff is here. They've got plenty of room, plenty of TVs tonight for Monday Night Football. If you want to come down and watch the Niners and Jets, or throughout the weekend, or even watch your Civil War football game here. You expect a good crowd for the Civil War?
Yeah, I hope so. I'm a Beaver fan, so Oregon football winning is good for business. But
we'll see.
At the end of the day, I'm a Beaver fan. So.
There you go. Leave it here. Got the BFT.
BFT. Now, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, live from the Independent Sports Bar and Grill, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
I'm at the Independent. I wish you were here. You could still get here in time for some of this broadcast and, of course, Monday Night Football, where they've got 34 televisions and a lot of booth seats. Anna and the girls are here. Downtown Portland on Broadway. This hour, you're going to hear from Jason Puckett, Puck Sports, huge Washington State fan, and a guy who can talk about the Apple Cup. We'll talk some NFL, the 49ers and Jets tonight in Santa Clara. Christian McCaffrey, what's the latest on McCaffrey, Stephen? Looks like there's some drama.
Yeah, Christian McCaffrey officially out tonight with the calf Achilles injury, so he will be out for the 49ers.
So, Niners, what'd that do to the point spread as the Niners are...
It's bouncing back and forth now. I looked right before the show. It was the Niners minus four. As soon as the news came out of McCaffrey, it went to three. Right. Now it's back up to 3.5. So, trending back to the Niners. But I don't know. I think I like the Jets tonight.
Okay, so you remember last week, and I was like on fire with my college picks. I think I went 12-3. I went 12-3 against the spread last week, and then and 15-0 picking the game straight up. This last week, Stephen, I went 7-4 in the 11 games I picked against the spread. Still very respectable, but I'm not quite high stepping like I was last week. Like I was high stepping, I'm not going to lie. And so I went 7-4, but as I told you, once you go like 12-3. There's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of pressure on me to succeed and perform. So I had a guy over the weekend who reached out to me and said, hey, who do you like in this Colorado-Nebraska game right before the game kicked off? And I was like, you were betting this game. Why are you? Don't do this to me. Don't put me in a position. By the way, what'd you make of Colorado-Nebraska? We ought to talk about that.
Rougher Colorado there. Yep. I thought it'd be a little more competitive, and it wasn't. At second half, it seemed like Colorado got a lot of the breaks, too. Referees were a little on their favor, and Nebraska still, you know, put it on them. It'll be interesting to see how they react this week against Colorado State, because we know that the thing about Colorado is when Shador said, like, it's a Super Bowl for everyone, he wasn't necessarily wrong. Like, people hate Colorado and all the attention that they get. So teams are going to want to destroy them.
Yep.
And now Colorado State, you know they're going to want to come in at home against Colorado and beat them, you know, beat them straight up in the
game. It's revenge.
It's revenge. So I don't feel good about, if I'm a Colorado fan, I can't feel good about how that game went against Nebraska, who's going to be a middle tier Big Ten team. You looked like a bottom tier team on that one.
Bad matchup. Matt Rhule's such a good defensive coach. They had a plan, and Colorado can't run the ball. And if you can't run the ball, it allows their defensive line to just pin its ears back and come after Shadur. And Nebraska, they didn't have to do anything fancy. They got to him.
They did, and we've talked about the transfer portal and how it may not necessarily work. I know for sure you cannot build an offensive line through the transfer portal. And Colorado has tried, and it has not worked twice in a row.
Yeah.
That is one thing you have to build from within, from the high school ranks, from your program. You can't just pick and choose that offensive line. That's going to be a problem.
All right, we're going to play some Punch It audio, which will give us a chance here to talk about a lot of what is going on in college football and the NFL. Niners Jets tonight. No Christian McCaffrey. Steven, you got a feel for that game. I'm a little concerned as a Niner fan about how they will play.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Jets plus 3.5. I think Aaron Rodgers, he can't get hurt again, right? Like, he can't get hurt again on the first play. So I think as long as he stays healthy, give me the Jets. I like it in that one.
You like the Jets. I'm a little worried. I also think it has that feel. Do you remember when Brett Favre came out, like his dad had passed away, and he threw like 5 touchdown passes?
Yeah.
It has, like, the return of Aaron Rodgers has this emotional impact that might be too much to overcome on an opening night, but we shall see. Let's play some Punch It.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio,
presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
We're going to start with Colorado, Nebraska. It wasn't much of a game. Nebraska got it done against the Buffaloes. Deion Sanders after the game. Punch it.
I have no idea. We would have known that answer. I think we would have responded quicker. Yeah, we seemed like we just never got it going until it was too late. Seemed like we just never got it going. Protections were a problem. You know, I'm trying to be polite and say it because, you know, I can say the same thing you're thinking, but if I say it, you say I'm throwing my guys up under the bus. I'm not doing that whatsoever. Protection were a problem. We got to figure out a way to prevent that and do a better job with that.
Protection was a problem. Nebraska had no problem. I think it's going to be a long, tough year for Colorado, and they get Colorado State in a rivalry game coming up. Northern Illinois with an upset at number 5 Notre Dame. Here's how it sounded in the end. Punch it.
He's lining it up. 5 seconds left. NIU up 16-14. 62-yarder. Snap, hold, Jeter's kick. It's blocked! It's blocked! It's blocked! Picked up by NIU! Picked up by NIU! The Huskies have done it! The Huskies with the biggest upset in NIU history! They come to South Bend, Indiana, and they knock off the number 5 team in the country!
NIU coach Thomas Hammack on the field after the game got emotional, and why wouldn't he?
I'm so proud of our kids, the coaches, just everybody. They believed. They believed. And we came here and got it done.
You told your guys this week that you didn't need anyone to be a superhero or superhuman. They just needed to be their best. What kind of performances did you see out there?
They listened to what I said. I told them all week, we don't need luck. We just got to be our best. And they was their best today, and we was able to get it done.
Where is this emotion coming from for you?
You know, all these guys that have been with our program, been through the ups and downs, and they continue to fight.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they my kids. I'm happy for the adversity, the push through. I just couldn't be more proud. I'm sorry.
Big, big win for Northern Illinois. Notre Dame shocked. Northern Illinois, the better team that day.
Does that knock Notre Dame out of the playoff, or do we not know how this is going to work exactly going into this 12-team playoff?
I think we don't know how it's going to work, but it hurts. It's like, you know, it's they're cut if this is a boxing match. And again, in the end, the problem for Notre Dame is they don't have a lot of opportunities to show the committee that they belong because of the schedule that they're playing.
And
Texas A&M early, USC late. In between, there is not a lot of opportunity for Notre Dame.
Yeah, and they're not in a conference, so they can't be a top four seed. The highest they can be is the number five seed. So you're right. Like they only have spots 5 through 11 to fit in. It will be interesting going forward because we talk about Oregon against Oregon State. Like if they lose, are they still in it? We just don't know how it's going to work out. But does one loss to a MAC team, does that knock you out of the play? I don't know if it should, but it's a good question that's going to be figured out.
Hey, look, the MAC team's played well all weekend, but losing at home against Northern Illinois, Michigan State, Jonathan Smith, they're 2-0 after this one.
One more deep breath for Jonathan Kim before a 37-yarder. He nailed it. Jonathan Kim with 1 second on the clock. In all likelihood, gives Jonathan Smith, his head coach, his first Big Ten win.
Big Ten first place team, Michigan State. Aiden Childs, 363 passing yards, 3 touchdowns, looked very, very good. Meanwhile, Danny Cannell saying he's starting to be concerned for the Ducks. They're 2-0. What's the problem? Punch it.
That's why the panic meter for me is a little bit higher, probably 6.7, because of the expectations coming in. All this, remember why Oklahoma was willing to part ways with him and go to Jackson Arnold. They wanted bigger play capability. You know, I think they were frustrated for exactly what we're talking about, the lack of explosive plays within that offense. And I think it was that top-tier arm strength. I thought he would plug in right where Bo Nix left off as far as the accuracy. I thought he would challenge his, 78% completion percentage. But I also thought he'd be able to give you the same explosive play rate, but he's not as good a runner. So, like, you're not going to get those types of runs and big plays from the QB. And Bo Nix probably has a better arm overall.
Definitely.
So I'm starting to get a little bit nervous for the top tier.
Look, I said this right around Big Ten Conference Media Day. A lot of people were just plugging and playing the statistics that Bo Nix put up a year ago. 4,500 passing yards, 45 touchdowns, only 3 interceptions. Everybody was plugging that in and going, Dillon Gabriel, just repeat what Bo Nix did. It's unfair, and I think it's not realistic to do that as it pertains to Dillon Gabriel. Caleb Williams said it was incredible to get a win. Punch it.
Obviously, it's great to get this first win. We're all excited. We went into the locker room, celebrate. I sat down and enjoyed the moment. Just watching all the guys celebrate, understand that I need to be better, I will be better, and then, just taking in the first win. It's unbelievable.
Kind of a tough debut for a lot of guys. He was 14 of 29 for 93 yards, did not throw a touchdown or an interception, fumbled once, sacked twice. But Caleb Williams walks off a winner in game one. Meanwhile, Bo Nix and the Broncos, they did not win in Seattle. Here's Bo Nix after a 26-20 loss to Seattle.
It was a challenge for sure, to say the least. I thought they were a really good defense. I thought they played well in their scheme. I thought they, rallied to the football. It was tough to get some explosive plays. And I think when you have a hard time getting explosives, and you got to sustain drives, they can get you in third and long, third and just tough situations. So overall, I think, as poorly as we did, I think we gave ourselves a chance to win. There at the end, our special teams and defense played incredible. They really kept us in the game and gave us hope. They battled. But I think, overall, you like to compete of our team. You like the look of, we never quit. We battled. It could have got out of hand, but it didn't. And we were, a possession away from having a chance, essentially. So,
Nix was 26 of 42 for 138 yards. No touchdowns, 2 interceptions. I thought he was okay for a team that, Steven, does not look very good around him. And yet, I left that game thinking, gosh, if I'm a Seahawks fan, I feel better about my team. If I'm a Broncos fan, I'm thinking, gosh, they should have traded for Brandon Ayuk when they had the opportunity to have one more guy who could stretch the field and be a playmaker would help him. But Denver, not very good.
I agree with you. Yes, yeah, Seattle tried to give them a game in the first half, especially, and Denver took advantage and took a lead, but it was mostly because of that defense. I will say, you know, Bo Nix, he looked very uncomfortable. He made a couple really bad passes off his back foot. He got intercepted at the 1 yard line where he kind of launched it up there. He made some mistakes that we didn't see at Oregon, but obviously it's a different level now. So I think he'll adjust and he's smart enough. Sean Payton's going to put him in the right spot. But it was a rough debut, I thought, for Bo Nix.
Joel Klatt talking about Texas. Texas walked all over Michigan. Hate to say I told you, but I did.
I've seen the teams that can go and win the national championship. I've seen their culture. I've seen their roster. I've seen their experience. And I've, more importantly, seen how they treat each other and how they go about their work. And Texas has that feel. That's a special group. I hope that they can maintain that special nature about their culture and the way that they care for one another within that building. Because to me, they've got something special. I'm highly impressed with Sark, what he's built, and what this team has. They've got the experience and talent to go and win it.
Experience and talent to win it, yes. They look built to win now, win at a high level, have guys who have been there before. And Michigan's, you know, in a coaching change. And look, I called that one. I said I thought Texas would win going away. Texas did win going away. Wasn't surprised there. Longhorns look like they're real, and we will see how they compete in the SEC because Michigan will not be the biggest test for Texas. Is Texas a Final Four team? They are to me, Stephen. How about you?
Yeah, I think they are. I do question, though, is this more of a Michigan problem than a Texas win, right? Like, Michigan looked really bad and was getting dominated from the get-go, but I'm with you. Texas does seem like they have the pieces, especially from last season. Quinn Ewers, the leader, coming back. They got dudes everywhere. Sark seems like he's got that offense under control. I'm with you. Texas looks like they're going to be a lock for the playoffs. Just how far can they get in that playoff?
By the way, Tom Brady making his debut over the weekend. Man of few words. What'd you think of Brady in the Cowboys-Browns game?
A little underwhelming. I think he's, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I think he's going to watch his film and he'll figure out, yeah, I need to be more assertive in certain spots.
He's terrible. He was terrible. What are you talking about? A little underwhelming.
I mean, he lacked energy for sure.
Yeah. He's getting like $4 million a word or what is he getting? He to me sounded like a guy who has gotten by on being Tom Brady for a long time. And I'm sorry, but if you go on social media and look at the mentions as people were tweeting during that game, people were blistering him. You know, and I feel bad for a guy like Greg Olsen, who should have been on that game and been the number one broadcaster on Fox this season.
If he doesn't get better, does it hurt his legacy?
No. People are still going to go. Guy won more Super Bowls than anybody. You know, end of story, period. But it is an example that just because you're good at one thing doesn't make you great at everything. And, you know, he was elite as a quarterback in the NFL. And sometimes that's enough. But it kind of reminded me a little bit of these billionaire owners of professional sports teams who have made their money in business and the private sector and in petroleum and in other industries, who then get control of a sports team and think because they were smart in this other area that they're going to be able to do it as an NFL owner or an NBA owner. Because in the end, I'm kind of left thinking that just because you're good at some of this stuff, it doesn't make you good at everything. Pivoting to the Browns. Dan Orlovsky saying the Browns should bench Deshaun Watson. He was bad.
Yeah, quarterback's a problem in Cleveland. And if I was Kevin Stefanski, I would be thinking long and hard about Jameis Winston and moving him to be my starting quarterback. They can't run anything in Cleveland. One, Kevin Stefanski, the beauty of this offense is that play action pass, Kyle Shanahan, Matt LaFleur, Gary Kubiak offense can't run it with Deshaun because Deshaun isn't ready to operate the play-action pass. He doesn't see the field well. He's not throwing in rhythm and timing. He's missing receivers by 6-7 yards, not feet.
Yeah, he looked uncomfortable and bad. Some of it is Cleveland's just not good around him, but at some point the Browns are going to point a finger at Deshaun and say, hey, you stink as an NFL quarterback right now. Deshaun Watson on borrowed time. Dan Lanning speaking, talking about Dillon Gabriel, bad snaps, led to a fumble. What's going on with that? Here's Lanning.
Yeah, it looked like the ball got snapped early. I think there's obviously some communication that he wasn't ready for the snap, so it probably shouldn't have came out yet. I don't know if there was a clap or something that was, you know, heard, and so we'll have to figure that out. That's something to address for sure. Happened twice tonight.
Happened twice. Meanwhile, Trent Bray at Oregon State says, hey, my guys know what the rivalry against Oregon means.
You know, they know of it. They're aware of it. There's only a handful that have done it and lived it. But, you know, the biggest is the opportunity to go out and compete at the national level, the national stage, and show what we can do and do it against a great opponent. And I think that's the bigger focus for our guys.
Look, this gives me a chance to talk about why this game is important to both sides. Oregon fan, Oregon State fan, listen to me. I'm going to tell you why the series must go on and will go on. I've talked to Scott Barnes at Oregon State, Rob Mullins at Oregon. Both want to play the Civil War. Both want to keep this thing going. Oregon did a whole bunch of moves to make it happen. But here's why it works for Oregon. It gives Oregon a quality non-conference game against an opponent that it doesn't have to get on an airplane to go visit. So there will be years like this one that Oregon's non-conference schedule will never take it more than 44 miles away from Eugene. It helps. It's a benefit. It's an advantage to Oregon. Simultaneously, Oregon State needs this game on their schedule. It gives them a quality opponent. Fox has signed on as the broadcaster. Oregon State and the Pac-12 get the revenue from the Fox broadcast. It works for Oregon State in that way. It makes their home schedule better, and it gives them a chance to play a Big Ten team at Research Stadium. It works for Oregon State as well. How about the Apple Cup? We'll find out next. Jason Puckett, he'll give us the view from the Apple Cup next.
Live from the Independent Sports Bar and Grill, back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
We're on remote broadcast today. That means I'm in downtown Portland. I am at the Independent Sports Bar on Broadway, Portland's best sports bar. Joining us now on the hotline, Jason Puckett, PuckSports.com. Good friend of mine, fantastic resource as it pertains to the Apple Cup, man of the world, exceptional golfer, great camper, got back from a camping trip. What else, Puck? Should I just go on?
Tall, handsome, professional fluffer. I don't know. Just keep going. It was wonderful.
Hey, how was the camping trip? Did you guys, because as I saw it, like I saw a picture on social media, did you take a van that you converted into like one of those cool vans that people do on Instagram?
No, you don't convert it, you dork. That's my van. That's God. Jesus. That's all those hippies down in Portland know what I'm talking about. I have an old 1985 Volkswagen Westphalia. They call it a Westie.
Okay. But didn't
Go find one of the Portland burnouts down by the bridge, and they'll tell you what it is. Okay,
there's probably one parked around here somewhere. Hey, a lot of enthusiasm for the Civil War. How's the Apple Cup going? How are ticket sales? How are Cougar and Husky fans feeling about this rivalry game in Week 3?
Well, last I heard about the ticket sales, it was bad. It was like 36, 37,000. They're playing at Lumen Field. That's where the Seahawks play, so that's not even half full. It's just a weird time. I mean, I think for both sides, they're not all that fired up for the game. I mean, really, I just think there's, for different reasons. One, you know, Washington's just in a different conference, so I think they're more looking ahead to the, you know, the Michigans and Ohio States of the world and navigating the Big Ten. I think for the Cougs, which I'm an alum, you know, the school and obviously a fan, I think there's so much animosity still from, you know, how everything transpired. I don't know why we or some in our fan base haven't gotten over it. Maybe how some Beaver fans have gotten over it, but it's just the reality of it. You know, I think if it were played later in the year, like it is traditionally, and it was played, you know, on campus, and that's part of it. This year was supposed to be in Pullman, then I think it'd be a little bit different. But the way that it's played now, early in the season, and it's in Seattle, I think it's turned a lot of Cougar fans off.
And McCoy, Washington State AD, just telling me 38,000 tickets sold now. What's that going to look like in the NFL stadium?
Terrible. Just awful. I mean, do you have any Browns fans, like old school? Or like old school Bengals fans that listen? I mean, like their stadiums? Like you know, I don't know, back in the 80s when I used to watch Beaver games and there was like five people there. I mean, it's going to be bad. And I would say of the 38,000, it's probably going to be
25,000 Husky fans. So that, you know, that's just gonna, it's not gonna look good. It's gonna feed into the narrative that, you know, maybe for at least our fan base, we don't care, or West Coast doesn't care. But I think part of it is where the game is played, when the game is played, but also I think it's back, you know, to the first part. I think if it's on campus, it's much better. I just hate when teams go and play off campus in these neutral sites. It has never worked. They've played there a handful of times, and it's just never worked at CX game.
The, you know, the start to the season for Washington State has been encouraging, and I think the body of work is there. John Mateer in week one looks like a, you know, a great passer. Now he looks like a great runner. What is he? What is Washington State's quarterback? And what do you expect of him in this Apple Cup?
Lamar Jackson 2.0. That's what he is. You know, he reminds me, I've been saying it a lot, and I think part of it is because he wears the same number, number 10, but he just reminds me an awful lot of former Husky quarterback Jake Locker. I mean, he's not quite as tall or as big. He's probably about 2 inches shorter, but he just plays exactly the same way. He's got a good arm, can be inaccurate, can make some throws and covers that you don't want to make. On the move and on the run, he is as gifted as any runner, any quarterback in the country. I mean, he made a run last week against Texas Tech. I mean, he juked the guy. You just don't see quarterbacks move like that. And that he is such an added weapon, you know, on Saturday against Washington, added weapon against anyone, because, you know, when the air raid breaks down, you have so many wide receivers that are going out in coverage. A lot of times you can get caught in man or zone, and then you're asking a linebacker to stop it. I mean, no disrespect. Well, yeah, actually, full disrespect to Washington. They have no one on defense that can slow him down. No one. Their defense up front is not good. Their secondary is good, but they're up front, they're pretty poor. So I expect them to have a big game. It's just whether or not Wazoo's defense can show up and slow down Coleman and Will Rogers.
What would a win in the Apple Cup do for Washington State fans? Do they immediately get re-engaged? What does it do to the psyche of that fan base?
I think what you just said. I think they're waiting for a moment, you know, to be re-engaged. I'll just steal your word. I think they need something to spark them, because I think it's been a tough year, and they just need like some vengeance, and they need to take it out on someone, and they need to take it out on Washington. So I think if they were to win the game, I think the fan base would be back in. You're looking at 3-0. I think I don't have the schedule in front of me. I think it's San Jose State after that. And you're 4-0. You're 4-0 going to Boise, and Boise's a good team. And so is Fresno, right? They got, I think, back-to-back games with those guys. So I think it just re-energizes them, and I think gets them to buy in, because I just think that they're so scarred for what's happened in the last 12, you know, 16 months that they just haven't fully bought in yet.
The guest here, Jason Puckett, you can find his work at pucksports.com. He does a fantastic job talking about everything but sports and then sports for a while. Look, the Huskies, have you had a chance to watch them? Have you had a chance to kind of get an early feel from what Jed Fish is doing? What kind of season does this feel like for Washington, you know, aside from what's going on with this Apple Cup?
Yeah, I've caught both games. It's, you know, weird in both games, because I think if you just watch both football games and just watch the first quarter, a quarter and a half, and almost the first half, you would just look at them and just say they're just very beatable. That they're, you know, they're not like the teams of the last 2 years. I think defensively they have taken a step back. Their secondary is strong and they can make some plays, and they're gonna be problematic, I think, for Wazoo's wide receivers up front. They're just not good. I mean, if Weber State had a quarterback, that game's so much closer than what it was. That kid was so bad. That's the worst quarterback I've ever seen in Division I. They pushed Washington around in the first half, and they were getting like 5, 6, 7 yards a carry, and they're running the same play. Eastern Michigan, I mean, you know, who knows how the game goes differently after that quarterback scramble. The guy runs, he's, you know, going down to like the 20, and then he fumbles the ball. I mean, they usually go up, they score, that's 10-0. So they just aren't really that good defensively. Maybe they're still trying to mesh with, you know, Belichick's defense and all that. But I think Washington State can expose them. They're going to have to score a ton of points, because I just think, even though they had a good game against Texas Tech, I'm not still convinced that their defense is all that good, especially up front. I think they have the same problem like Washington does, and Jonah Coleman. And what Arizona did last year to Wazoo, I mean, that was a clinic. So You know, I think Jed Fish is probably, you know, hasn't exposed the whole playbook. There's no doubt he has not. And he will no doubt probably unleash that on Saturday. But, you know, I think Washington is finding themselves so many transfers, John. I mean, God, I can't even keep track of how many transfers they have. So it's going to take them a while to probably hit their, you know, full speed. And it probably won't be until, like, I don't know, week 8, 9, or 10.
You hit on that something I've been talking about and thinking about with transfers. Oregon's got a ton of transfers, 13 of the 22 starters transfers. They're having some synergy issues and, you know, dumb mistakes and things like that that are happening. Do you think that's going to be a storyline? Do you think the teams with a bunch of transfers have been sloppier or maybe don't have the culture or chemistry, or am I making too much of that?
No, it's 100%. You see it all the time. You see it all the time in the NBA, right? When everyone gets excited when Devin Booker and Kevin Durant and that's who the third piece was. They all join forces, right? And they don't mesh because it's hard to do it. It just is. You just can't throw a bunch of people together and expect, you know, instant chemistry. Sometimes it happens, but a lot of times it does not. I always remember when the Lakers tried to build their dynasty at the end of, you know, that run where they brought in, like, Gary Payton and Karl Malone. They were terrible. You know, I think the same thing in college football. I think it can really help and it can spark you. But at times I think you get too many guys in. And if they just, you know, if they are, you know, playing for their own agenda, and what I mean by that is they're just playing for themselves and improving their stock and maybe their draft stock, or hey, where's my next opportunity going to be? How much money am I going to make in NIL? I think it's a huge factor with continuity. I think that's why you see teams like Boise and some of these other teams. You know, I think Northern Illinois being able to beat Notre Dame, even though I don't know how many transfers Notre Dame has. I just think that I think those schools, because they play together for, you know, more years than the bigger schools, I just think have that continuity, and it makes them a better team.
Yeah, Notre Dame's got a transfer starting at quarterback, and
that's right, yeah.
Didn't look good. All right, so tell me this. TV ratings come out, and for the CW, the ratings were just okay. I mean, you know, Washington State, Portland State's not going to draw a huge audience. It's just small sample size. But I was comparing them to Washington and Oregon, and the two Pac-12 schools were right in there in week one with the Big Ten Network audience. By the way, how's that Big Ten Network blackout going over with people up there?
Oh, my God. It's you know what? I think most Cougar fans just sit back and just laugh because it's so funny. It's so funny to hear, you know, people up here, alumni and fans complain and, you know, because and bitch and moan about it when, you know, the whole reason was to get more exposure on national TV, right? They couldn't take the Apple deal, need more exposure, and then no one's been able to watch them for the most part. You know, a lot of people are just cutting the cord because it's Comcast up here and go into a streaming service like Fubo or YouTube TV. But yeah, I mean, just you know, it's an unmitigated disaster. But that's like, you know, that's just college football in a nutshell, the way it is right now.
Yeah, I mean, Oregon's been on Peacock in the Big Ten Network, and Washington's been blacked out twice on the Big Ten Network, and that's the start of your Big Ten era. And now Michigan's AD is saying they won't play a Friday night game. And here is Washington playing two of them, and Oregon's playing on a Friday night, you know, a couple of times. And it's just, it's interesting to see how this is all going. We're talking to Jason Puck at PuckSports.com if you want to see his work. Puck is on, good friend of the show. Puck, give me an idea. Jake Dickert, after the win against Texas Tech, basically said, you've heard it before, you've seen it before, we belong. This is just another example of we belong. How sure are Washington State fans that they can keep him if he keeps winning?
They're not going to keep him. There's just no way. If they win, if they get, you know, they have a good season, you know, nine plus wins, and a team from a, you know, Power Four conference comes calling. I mean, I love Jake Dickert to death. He should leave. He just should, you know, and that's coming from an alum. I just think that, you know, he's got to look out for himself. He's got to look out for the people on his staff. I mean, I think I don't think he would leave because he's chasing that next thing. I just think that he loves the coach and he'd like to be in a, you know, a pretty certain situation. It's, you know, it's uncertain over there. So that's a huge worry. I mean, there were rumors last year before they went down the toilet that Michigan State was looking at him, that he was looking at Michigan State. That was a big topic. And then, like, right when that story came out, I mean, I think they were 4-0 at that point. I mean, that's when they went on their, I think that's the Arizona game or the UCLA game where they just, you know, they just absolutely fell apart. So, I think the lure of a bigger school and a bigger program is always going to be there for anybody that coaches at that school. It's just the nature of it and the way it's always been.
All right, so last question. You know, if they beat Washington, the fan base reengages. Maybe ticket sales go up. Maybe viewership goes up. If they lose the game, what happens?
If they lose the game.
I just love your reaction to that. Like,
I just can't take it. I mean, you know, there's some fans that I know are playing the whole, well, I don't really want to play the game anyway, so I don't care if we win or lose. Yeah, I don't feel that way. I mean, I want to beat them at everything. But I want to, you know, I live here, so I live next to all of them. I just think this Washington team that I've seen in the first two games is so vulnerable. I just think they have to beat them. I think, you know, you and I have talked on my show about this a bunch, that I think to stay in the national conversation, to be relevant, they've got to win these games. They had to beat Texas Tech, not because Texas Tech was all that good, because they were a Big 12 team, because it was on national TV. You know, this week's game's not on national TV. It's on Peacock, but it's Washington. They left you to go to the Big Ten. You need to beat them to show not them, but it's the rest of the country. You made a mistake by not including our school into this conference realignment. So it's a huge win. I think it's one of the biggest games for Washington State. Does it put them back? No. I think for fans, it creates more apathy, and that's what I would be concerned about. You know, because I think there is some apathy that's going on right now with the fan base. So if they do lose, and if they lose in a terrible fashion, I just think it creates more of that. They don't need that.
I am leaning towards picking Washington State in this game. I think they have the better body of work, but we shall see how this plays out. PuckSports.com, where else can they find you, Puck?
You can follow me on X at Puck2040, YouTube, Puck Sports, PuckSports.com. We're doing live shows every day now. You can follow on YouTube and X starting at 10 a.m. And, of course, all that stuff gets, as you see, you know, as you are used to saying, it's, you know, everything's podcast, Apple, Spotify, wherever you find your podcast.
I appreciate you coming on and sharing that rivalry with us. A lot of Civil War talk. Good to catch up with you, Puck. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, John. Be well. Thank you.
There he goes, Jason Puckett, PuckSports.com. I'm at the Independent Sports Bar, downtown Portland, right on Broadway. 49ers coming up against the Jets, or is it the Jets at the Niners? Tonight, Aaron Rodgers suited up on the field in Santa Clara. Will it be his night or not? Leave it here.
Bye. Live from the Independent Sports Bar and Grill, back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Sports Bar in downtown Portland. Jets Niners coming up tonight on Monday Night Football. There's a mouse in the house. Anna has stepped into the studio. She brought the girls down here. What do you think of the digs here at the Independent?
I love it.
Yeah?
I haven't been here since it was the Independent, and it's lively. I like it.
Yeah, they got a lot of TVs going on, which for sports fans, that's a thing.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. James Earl Jones.
I know.
Passed away today.
That.
The age of 93. What do you think of when you think of a movie involving James Earl Jones?
I think of two movies. I think of Star Wars, obviously, because he was the voice of Darth Vader. And I think of Field of Dreams.
I'm going to go right to Field of Dreams.
Ray. People will come, Ray. Yeah. They'll come to Iowa for reasons they can't even fathom. They turn up your driveway, not knowing for sure why they're doing it. They'll arrive at your door as innocent as children, longing for the past. Of course, we won't mind if you look around, you'll say. It's only $20 per person. They'll pass over the money without even thinking about it. But it is money they have, and peace they like.
I Obviously, it makes me sad that he passed away. Age of 93, good life, long life, lots of movies. But I think of Field of Dreams. I mean, he is in that movie, at the center of that movie. Might be the most important character in that movie.
Well, he was in The Sandlot, too. Yeah. Remember? He was the owner of the Beast.
So many movies.
I know. I mean, he's such an iconic part of American culture. It's crazy. But I didn't know that he was 93, too.
I didn't either. We haven't seen him in a while.
Yeah.
And in my mind, he's forever frozen at the age he was when Field of Dreams came out. And I don't want to even remember how many years ago that was, but, you know, he was probably up there then. But that's Stephen, what's your memory of James Earl Jones and the voice of Darth Vader or what?
Yeah, I'm with Anna. It's both. It's Darth Vader and it's the Field of Dreams for me as well, because I just feel like my mom growing up, she loved Star Wars, so, like, she would watch those movies. And so, like, you just hear that voice and you hear it loud and clear. Like, that's just what it is. Such an iconic voice. And then, The Sandlot as well. We just recently watched that movie with the kids maybe a couple months ago. And, you kind of forget he's in the movie until you see him at the end there.
1989, Field of Dreams.
He was also the original 19 what?
89.
Oh, wow. So it was just like 20 years ago.
Yeah, it just happened.
When you say like 89, that's what I think.
Yeah, 35 years ago.
Of
course he's 93.
He was also the original Mufasa in Lion King.
Oh, yeah, right? I remember that. Yeah, yeah. Yep.
How could you forget?
Well, he did a lot of voice work because he was a voice.
Right.
And he was also the guy, I think it was CNN.
Yeah,
this is CNN.
Like, everybody has a James Earl Jones impression.
Of course.
But nobody has a good James Earl Jones impression.
No, everybody just lowers their voice and talks like that. All right, you have the 5 at 5 coming up. Are you all kinds of fired up about this?
Yeah.
You got a good one?
A good one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have at least one good story
all
out
right,
of the 5.
Out of 5.
Yeah.
One out of five, good.
Yeah.
We also... We're going to take a phone call from a guy in Houston, Texas right now who's been holding. And then we have a story about your mom I want to tell.
Okay.
Stephen, I got a text from Anna's mom this morning, and she never sends me a text saying, call me ASAP. And I'll tell the rest of the story after this phone call. Andrew is calling in from Houston, Texas. Andrew, what's up, man?
Canzano, what's up? How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. What's on your mind? What's it like in Houston, Texas today?
It's awesome weather today. It's perfect. And this is what I want to know. So you give it to us real and raw. What do the Beavers need to do? No sugarcoating it. What do they need to do to take out the Ducks, put it right in square, and regain the throne this Saturday?
All right. Oregon State will need two turnovers to be in that game or win that game. And Oregon State's going to have to run the ball effectively. And the problems that Oregon has had cannot be solved. Like, we can't be at the end of the first quarter, second quarter. The broadcasters on Fox can't be saying, hey, Oregon has solved its problems. But the Oregon team that I saw against Idaho and the Oregon team I saw for about three quarters against Boise State is not going to blow Oregon State off the field like everybody thought they would at the beginning of the season. But I think Oregon State needs a couple of turnovers. And given the way that, you know, Oregon has played to this point, they have turned the ball over against Idaho, turned the ball over against Boise State, you know, I think there's a little hope. And I was kind of looking at the ticket prices on secondary ticket markets in Corvallis, and the ticket prices went up after week one. Meaning, I think some Oregon State fans saw the way that Oregon played against Idaho and went, oh, this might not be embarrassing. Maybe I'll go to this game. Maybe they have a chance. And then it happened again after the Boise State game. Standing room only tickets are all that's left, and the secondary ticket market is hot right now for the Civil War game. Conversely, the Apple Cup game, it's a really soft market. They've overpriced the tickets. It's an NFL stadium. The secondary market is not where you want to go. Just buy a ticket directly from Washington State or Washington if you're looking for a ticket for the Apple Cup. But I just think it's really interesting to see how this goes. Now, I'll give my official pick on the record, 5-star pick on Thursday for all these games. 19-7 this season I am, knock it on wood, against the spread. I've been very well, 12 games over 500 after 2 weeks. And I am 25-1 picking winners. Which game did I miss? Well, I called Cal plus the points against Auburn, but I did not have Cal winning the game. I had Cal losing narrowly to Auburn, but covering the spread. It's the only game I've missed this season straight up. So I'm feeling pretty good about my ability to pick winners. If you want to get those, johnconzano.com is where you go. Get a free subscription or get a paid subscription, so you make sure you get it on Thursday morning when I post my picks. Now, Anna, your mom texted me. I'm going to read the text message that she sent me this morning. It was alarming to me. All of a sudden, I get this text. She says, please call me. It's an emergency. And she put our nephew's name in parentheses.
Yeah.
Had an accident in Pennsylvania, and he's in jail.
Yeah, Pennsylvania.
And he's in jail.
Yeah.
Okay, and so I immediately call her, and she says she's frantic. And had she tried to call you first?
Yeah, she tried me first, and I missed it, so you were her next resource.
Can you kind of fill people in on how old your mom is, kind of the story of your mom, all that stuff?
My mom's 81. She's a smart lady. And, but, you know, she's 81. Like, she's pretty good with technology.
Okay.
But, you know, there are some gaps, right? And
okay.
Obviously, English was her second language.
Okay.
And she gets a phone call today.
From our
presumably
nephew. From her grandson.
From her grandson.
Who says, I'm in jail.
He's in jail and that he needs money.
$9,500, Stephen.
$9,500, and that he has a broken nose.
And I, before she said he had a broken nose, I said, hold on, does he have a broken nose? I asked her that, and she said, how did you know? And I said, because this is a scam. Somebody has called you pretending to be your grandson, asking you for $9,500 that would help get you get him bailed out of jail and help him with his attorney fees. And why would he be in Pennsylvania? And she says, no, I talked to him. It sounded just like him,
yeah.
Except with a broken nose. And I said, no, this is a scam. I want you to not do anything. What did they ask you for? Apparently, they asked her for $9,500 and her address. She gave her address, but was getting ready, I guess, to go to the bank and withdraw $9,500.
So crazy.
They told her, too, not to tell anybody else about it. So it's a huge red flag. This is a public service segment. If somebody tells you, I need you to go withdraw $9,500 from the bank or any amount of money from the bank.
Any amount of money.
And says to you, don't tell anyone else. Red flag, red flag, red flag. To her credit, she tried to call you and she texted me.
Yeah, and, you know, they put her on the line with, like, supposedly an attorney. And the wacky part is that she swears, like, again, my mom, who's a smart lady, she swears it sounded just like him. So we're trying to figure out, like, have they gotten his voice from something else used AI?
That's why they say it's a broken nose. That's why they say it's a broken
nose.
Oh,
it's a broken
nose. But isn't it gross? Isn't it gross?
That's terrible.
Isn't it horrible that somebody would try to take advantage of an elderly person? Like, isn't that despicable?
Yeah, the scammers have gotten so good. The scammers have gotten so good nowadays.
Yeah.
But if you're out there and you get a phone call from somebody, hey, I'm in trouble. I'm in jail. I'm in another country.
And it's not just that. Like, remind the elderly people in your life that this
yes.
can happen to
them. Called my dad. That's why I called my dad. I said, you get a call and this happens, don't do it.
BFFT. Now, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, live from the Independent Sports Bar and Grill. Here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
We're about 15 minutes from the Niners and the Jets on Monday Night Football. Aaron Rodgers and his return, his comeback begins tonight in Santa Clara. Christian McCaffrey out for the Niners. Steven paying careful attention to that because I think Steven has the Jets on the money line. Am I wrong?
You are not wrong. I do.
Yeah. So. Did you do that before McCaffrey was out?
I did, yeah.
Wow.
Judah really talked me into it. So if they lose, it's Judah's fault.
Yeah, blame him. Anna's here. We're going to do the 5 at 5 before we lead you right into this Monday Night Football game with the Jets and the Niners. 49ers trying to get back to the Super Bowl. Jets trying to prove they're a playoff team. Aaron Rodgers warming up on the field right now. Anna, you got the 5 at 5? You all ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right, let's do it. Steven, cue it up.
The 5 at 5.
number one.
Well, I was going to announce that Christian McCaffrey was out.
No, do it anyway.
You just said that. No, I'm going to move on. Christian McCaffrey is out. You just said that. That was sort of 1A.
Okay.
1B is that Aaron Rodgers admitted to a reporter that he wasn't sure that he could return to football after his Achilles tendon injury.
Oh, wow.
Which makes Monday night's return even more emotional for him.
I think he's hamming it up
this
now.
This is Aaron Rodgers. This has been Aaron Rodgers.
Is he hamming it up because he's coming back? I didn't know if I could go on after that. Because after the injury, he said, I'll be back. And then tried to come back by the end of the season.
He said, with all the ups and downs last year, there's going to be a lot of appreciation for being able to be back on the field. Of course, simultaneously, his Netflix docuseries released its trailer today. Aaron Rodgers, you're going to love this, Enigma.
Is set
to premiere.
He is an enigma. Wrapped in a headband, hiding in a deprivation chamber in Southern Oregon.
It's a three-part series, everyone, set to premiere in December on Netflix. So set your streamer.
I thought about something with all the stuff around Rodgers. When we had Ian O'Connor on the show, he's done this book about the Rodgers comeback, and he went and spent time with him. And I said to Ian, like, you know, you're really rooting for Rodgers to have a nice season, because if he goes to the Super Bowl or he plays deep in the playoffs, and this is a chance to sell more books. So there's a lot riding on this, besides the Jets fans who have been miserable for decades.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Number two.
I think it's interesting that Caleb Williams is talking about, you know, the Bears winning over the Titans, but his performance. He's saying that, you know, he understands that he needs to be better.
Yeah.
And he's promising that he will be better. He's acknowledging that he missed some passes and stressed that the offense would focus on being more efficient going forward. So the review on game one for him has not been glowy.
I also think that a lot of the rookie quarterbacks struggled. Bo Nix struggled. Caleb Williams struggled. It wasn't a great weekend for, like, the new guys. And, you know, Jaden Daniels had some moments, but, you know, he wasn't great either. You know, he ran for two touchdowns, but, you know, he only finished with 88 yards running and 184 passing yards. Probably had the better of the three games, which I did not expect, but nobody blew anybody away. This wasn't like the rookies came out and just played lights out and everybody went, well, that's why they picked him in the first round. Bo Nix, underwhelming, I thought, just okay. And Caleb Williams, statistically under 100 passing yards.
Number three.
Also, no one blown away by Tom Brady's performance as a broadcaster. His rookie performance in the booth for Fox Sports. Now, I want to know what you think about Scott Hansen apologizing.
What do you mean, apologizing?
So, NFL Red Zone host says, you know, Brady's got to get more excited than that in the booth.
Oh, he got in trouble for that?
And
for
he got
criticizing?
In trouble for that. So he wrote it on Twitter, and then he apologized on Twitter, saying that it was unfair and inconsiderate for him to say that, even if it was tongue-in-cheek. And he emphasized that he is rooting for Brady to succeed in this second career.
Well, he's obviously doing this because the NFL has a, you know, kind of a hand in his employment. But the truth is, Tom Brady wasn't very good.
Like, he wasn't saying anything that everyone else was saying.
That's the world we live in. You know, it's why I love that this station that you're listening to, it's not home of the Ducks, it's not home of the Beavers, it's not home of the Blazers, it's home of the truth, because we can talk here. We can have a real conversation. I think fans and viewers are smart enough to think for themselves. Anybody who heard Tom Brady knows he was clunky and quiet. I noted that he wasn't talking very often. Tim Kawakami, my friend, former colleague of mine, we worked together. I tweeted Tom Brady, man of few words, and Kawakami noted that Brady was only talking when they played a replay of a play, almost like he had been instructed to not speak during play and only talk when they're watching an instant replay. Is it possible that Fox is coaching him on the fly? I don't know, but he didn't sound comfortable. He didn't sound competent. And I felt bad for Greg Olson, who should still be the number one analyst for Fox.
The question is, will he be better?
He'll get better.
And will he improve quickly? Because I don't think people are going to have the patience to sit here. It's like watching a brand new reporter. Like, I was that reporter at one point, who was really green and not very good. But I was doing it with guardrails on. You know, I wasn't Tom Brady. So it's like, are people going to have the patience to watch him improve?
And
I don't know.
Here's what I wanted, though. Like, he is maybe the greatest quarterback of all time.
Yeah.
Most would argue that. I wanted in a moment, like, they were talking about Dak Prescott's contract extension. Contract got done the morning of the game.
Yes.
I want Tom Brady to tell me right then, what is that like to play a game without having to think about your contract?
Right.
Or is it a non-factor? Speak from your own experience. He couldn't do that. He wasn't doing that. He's not comfortable doing that because he has spent his life, when he is in front of a microphone, not saying what he really thinks, not telling people what's really going on in his life, and being guarded. And now he's suddenly in this position where the microphone's there, and, you know, it would be great if he could speak freely, and he's not that guy. So I think he'll get better. I don't think he'll ever be good at it. Just my take. No apology needed.
Number four.
All right. Colorado safety Shiloh Sanders underwent surgery to repair a forearm injury
he
took Saturday.
Yeah, broke his arm.
Nebraska. Yeah. So Coach Prime posting a message confirming this with pictures of Shiloh at the hospital. He's in a wheelchair wearing a sling to protect his right arm. I mean, I feel for the kid.
Well,
broken forearm.
I do too. I feel for anybody who gets injured. Period. End stop. But the more I look at Colorado football, the more I believe that Coach Prime is there to showcase his sons and Travis Hunter. Travis Hunter having some frustration on the field during the game. Shadur made a really bad throw that ended up being a pick six. Didn't play his best game.
Well, and how long before Shadur gets hurt?
Yeah,
I mean, the number of times that he's getting sacked.
He's getting sacked. He's getting hit when he's not getting sacked. This is all not trending in a good direction for Colorado, and anybody who thinks otherwise is not paying attention. What Colorado needs is it needs a W. And, you know, I think Colorado's got talent, but the problem is Colorado also has a lot of individual players who are worried about themselves and their own brands and how many followers they have. And they're not the only team in America that has that. But when you don't win and you don't get success, those teams turn into club teams that you know, guys defect, guys check out. We saw it at the end of the year with Colorado. So the best potion for Colorado is getting a W this week against Colorado State. It would be huge in Coach Prime's mission. So he's got to find a way. He's got to find a way to draw up a W. And they put a lot of pressure on Shadur. It's not really fair to him. He's got no offensive line. The defense knows they're not going to run the ball. You know, they don't even try to run the ball. It just puts a lot of pressure on him, and any good D coordinator or decent defensive team is going to give them trouble right now. Finally, number five. Here we go.
Number five.
Dak Prescott revealing that his teammates are expecting new watches after he signed his record-breaking contract extension. Apparently, it's got teammates giving him their wrist sizes for Rolexes following his new four-year, $240 million deal.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, pay it forward, Dak. What? By the way, I didn't even know I was supposed to have a wrist size.
Yeah.
Is that's a thing?
Well, when you make that kind of money, apparently it is.
Apparently.
Or if you're a watch guy. You're not a watch guy.
That's really a nice watch, apparently. All right. We are at the Independent. We're back tomorrow with another great show. For Stephen Vaughn, for all the interns, for our producer, Josh, who did a great job today, I thank everybody who was part of this broadcast. And we are back tomorrow with another great show. The Bald-Faced Truth, not here for a long time, just a good time.